This is to do with my glasses. I just got glasses after about a year without them, and I haven't been able to really see people for about a year. So it's kind of nice to be able to see details again. Unfortunately, I can't read with them on, which is why I've sent poor Richard running upstairs to get my reading glasses so that I can look at what I brought with me. Firstly, I want to dedicate this talk to my teacher, Zenke Blanche Hartman, and to Isan Dorsey, who of course was the founding spirit of this temple, and also to dear Dharma brother John King, who actually taught me how to do the priestly parts at the altar right here in this zendo. Who's also deported. This talk is actually inspired by one of the people that I work with. As some of you know, I work out a lot on the streets with low-income people. And lately, one of my guys came to group and said that he'd stayed up all night. And I was a bit concerned because he's in recovery. And so I said to him, what did you stay up doing all night long? And he said, well, actually I stayed up breathing. And he said, for all the times he's been coming to group and I keep talking about breathing, and finally for some reason it just came home to him. And he said, so he took, he sat in his room and he took a great big deep breath. And then thought to himself, is that worth more than $1 million? Yes. And then he took another great big deep breath and went, is that worth more than a Cadillac? Yes. So he stayed up all night long, breathing, simply because he'd become aware of the preciousness of the breath. And that while we're alive, we have it, and when we don't have it, we're gone. So he really stayed up the whole night long just enjoying his breath. That's the one, thank you. Now, don't let anything fall out of it. So as I go on with teaching, I find that things get, thank you, more and more simple. And it struck me that sometimes it's possible to get really caught up in forms. We're all right. Okay. That we get really caught up in forms. And recently I was teaching in Santa Cruz, and I was at their Zen Center, and I also taught at their Diversity Center, which is their LGBT alphabet center. And a lot of people at the Diversity Center said that they like to meditate. And I said, oh, then you'll be going to the Zen Center. And they said, oh, no. And I said, why? What's wrong? And they said, well, you know, you go there to learn to meditate. You hear all these great things about Zazen. You step in the door and they say, no, no, the foot nearest the door jamb. Step in with that foot. And then you get in and they say, and put your hands like this. And then you start to walk and they say, no, slower. And then you have to walk that way. And they said, by the time you get to that little round black cushion, you're kind of over it. It takes way too long to actually get to the meditation part. Now, of course, we know the value of the forms, but it seems to me that, you know, all praise to Suzuki Roshi, thank goodness he brought over the practice. And so far I feel like we're kind of trying to train monks all the time. And this practice is incredibly wonderful, a source of great joy. I mean, it's called the Dharma Gate of repose and bliss. So if we're not feeling in repose and blissful, perhaps we should look at how we're actually doing this practice. And I've seen an awful lot of people kind of get attached to the forms. If I can't sit with my legs all pretzeled up, I'm not really doing it right. I was stuck with that one for a long time. And I have a bad back. I need to lie down sometimes, but or even sit in a chair. Heaven forfend, you know, Steve, you're just not doing anything because you're sitting in a chair, you know. So we do get kind of attached to the forms, and we know that they're really useful. We know that it helps us to have a focus for our attention, so we're not sitting there going, blah, 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 you know. We know what we're doing or not. But what's the most essential part of the practice? What is it that everybody can do, whether they're physically or mentally capable of getting into a position like this or not? What's the most essential part? Of course, if you look at Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, I did this some time ago, and you look for the words, this is the most essential thing, or this is the most important thing. There's endless most important things in here. So I looked actually at, now I can't pronounce this. I don't know about you, but that's another drawback to this practice. All those funny names, you know. So let me get the word right, because I know some people like that kind of precision. So, the Ancient Sutra. Now this is where the reading glasses come in handy. It actually was quite relaxing not to be able to see detail. I kind of found it kind of gave me an inner focus. And besides that, mirrors were not so dangerous as they are now. When you haven't seen yourself for a while. As we say in Scotland, old age does not come by itself. There are definite things that come with it. The Anapanasati Sutra, the Sutra on the Full Awareness of Breathing. This is what I have come to be studying lately. I can recommend this book for those of a scholarly bent. It's Thich Nhat Hanh, Breathe, You Are Alive. And it says in the introduction to this book that actually this was the first thing that the historical Buddha taught, not the jhanas, the absorptions, not any other kind of meditation. The very first thing he taught was the breath, and simply the breath. So the whole sutra is simply working on awareness of breath. It's very interesting for those of you that like to do a little bit of mind training. It's actually in four parts. The first part refers to working with the body. The second works with the feelings. The third part with the mind. And the fourth part with the objects of mind. So, in other words, it's complete, total awareness of all dharmas, starting off with just the breath. Before I get into details, I think it's very important to address this idea of becoming attached to teachings or practices. There's a kind of a disclaimer that Suzuki Roshi does very well. And something I think to keep in mind, I like to try to remember to read this before I do any Dharma talks. Because, especially if I can find the page there. Well, you'll see why. And it's always nice to hear Suzuki Roshi. The more you understand our thinking, the more you find it difficult to talk about. The purpose of my talking is to give you some idea of our way, but actually it's not something to talk about. The best way is just to practice without saying anything. When we talk about our way, there is apt to be some misunderstanding because the true way always has at least two sides, the negative and the positive. When we talk about the positive side is missing. And when we talk about the positive side, the negative side is missing. We cannot speak in a positive and a negative way at the same time, so we do not know what to say. It's almost impossible to talk about Buddhism. If we understand this point, we will understand how to talk about Buddhism, and we will have perfect communication. To talk about something will be one of our practices, and to listen to the talk will also be practice. When we practice Zazen, we just practice Zazen without gaining any idea. When we talk about something, we just talk something, just the positive or the negative side, without trying to express some intellectual one-sided idea. And we listen without trying to figure out some intellectual understanding, without trying to understand from just a one-sided view. This is how we talk about our teaching and how we listen to a talk. Very important. The English language doesn't really lend itself to all-inclusive communication. So, of course, what Suzuki Roshi was pointing out was just that. And when I say that, that includes this, which is a whole other talk. But good to remember when one is listening. So back to the breath. Though I thought, you know, being a modern person, I'd do a little research on the internet to find, in particular, what the Buddha had said. You know, what did he actually say, if he ever said anything that anyone ever wrote down. But what did he say about the breath? So I googled it, right? Buddha breath. Now you might be interested to know that for only $24 you can buy the Buddha Nose Breathe Easy Chest Salve. Buddha Nose Breathe Easy Chest Salve is a fresh and minty body moisturizing salve that reminds us that breathing feels good. Lavender essential oil help relax chest muscles, while peppermint, rosemary, eucalyptus, and hyssop essential oils encourage clear airways, just in case your airways need some encouragement. Many who practice meditation believe that the breath links us directly to the transcendental. Just what I was going to talk about. Yogis enjoy how the clarity of this aroma deepens their practice, etc., etc. So that's something that you might be interested in. You don't have to listen to a Dharma talk. You don't have to sit for hours practicing. All you have to do is go out and get the Buddha Nose Breathe Easy Chest Salve, and your problems are over. Alternately, you could get a tin of 100 green Buddha monk breath mints candy. That sounds kind of exciting as well. So, Buddha, and actually it was a very nice little tin with a little picture of Buddha, so when you finished eating the mints you could set up a teeny tiny altar, you know. And that's only $3.95, that was a bargain. I think humour is just as important as meditation for getting through life, by the way, if that's not already obvious. So, here we are at the Anapanasati Sutra. Now, it's actually, as I said, an extremely, extremely simple practice. And I thought we might just try number one, and then I thought we might just try number two and see how that goes. I've been teaching this, but not calling it the Anna whatever sutra, in the woman's shelter. They actually love doing this. And I brought some of the games with me that we do it with. I mean, because we don't sit around like this, you know, staring at each other soulfully. We actually play games and have fun while we're learning how to stay with the breath. I'll give you the ancient version first, and then let's play a game together and see what happens. So basically, all we're going to do is I'll just go quiet for a moment, and we're just going to describe to ourselves our breathing. So it would be something like breathing in, a long breath. By the way, traditionally this says, I am breathing in a long breath, and I breathe out a short breath, and so forth. But if you look closely at Suzuki Roshi, he says in that part about, which I could read to you if you like, the part about the breath just coming in and out of the body, and he says to put I in there is a hindrance. So simply to remark upon the breathing, so already of course we're improving this ancient sutra by simply saying breathing in a long breath, breathing out a long breath. Now, you don't have to use long. This is awareness. So try to see what kind of breath you are breathing. So it could be long, it could be short, it could be heavy, it could be light, it could be deep, whatever it is. And that's all that we're going to do. So it's simply paying that much attention. Describe every breath to yourself. Okay? And then we'll stop. So could you give us a bell and give us maybe 4 minutes, the 4 minute warning, and then hit the bell again. Thank you. personally, I find that one so relaxing that it almost makes me fall asleep every time. Every time I practice it. Now, you can see right there. First of all, did anyone have any problem speaking about their breath to themselves? Everybody managed that. So you can see what an extremely useful practice that is, because it enables us to actually practice Zazen 24/7. Now, this came up at a priest meeting one time. Someone started a discussion on what is Zazen, what is this kind of meditation we're doing, what does it involve? And most of the priests at the meeting were putting forth how you sit with your back straight and how you have your legs and what you do with your hands and having your head back over your shoulders and all the rest of the forms, which I'm not in any way saying that we should throw away. I'm just putting forth the point that supposing you couldn't get into those positions for some physical reason or some other reason, you could not adopt any of those positions, still, while you're alive, you can use the breath. And thinking of it and teaching it this way recently has made me notice that when people start to focus on the breath, no matter how they're sitting, one of the things they'll notice pretty soon is that it's actually easier to breathe deeply and into your belly here if you sit up fairly straight. And then it's actually easier to breathe if you're sitting in a stable position. And then you might wonder what to do with your hands, and then you find it's easier to breathe with your head slightly like this. And in actual fact, I think the position unfolds from the breathing, not the other way around. So if we're practicing the breathing, the breath itself will arrange our bodies for us. I remember my teacher Blanche telling me the only time that Suzuki Roshi got angry at her was when they were talking about counting the breath, another good way to stay with the breath. And she went to Dokusan with him and said, that's it, I've learned how to count the breath. I can count every single breath all through a period of Zazen now. What's next? And he said, do not think that you are doing Zazen. Zazen sits Zazen. So I think in order to allow Zazen to sit Zazen, we can simply begin with the breath and let Zazen unfold from there. So as I said, I use... I don't have a clock or anything with me. What time is it? 10:30, okay. I want to leave plenty of time for us to talk about this because I think it's quite fascinating and actually essential. But I mentioned that I have a couple of... Oh, I've always wanted a watch. Thank you. Quite a nice one, too. Oh, it's not Rolex, though, Steve.
That one's at home. Uh-huh.
So I mentioned that there are a number of practices that I do with the folks that come to groups. And all I've been working on in the last few weeks completely is the breath. So we have quite a few games that we do with the breathing. Of course, just about anything can, you know, be a fun game. Yesterday I was teaching at a brown bag lunch for the roving team who offer mental health services, and actually the forensic roving team were there too yesterday. They have been asking me to come over and teach on the conjunction between spirituality and mental health and how to bring spirituality into your practice of helping people, basically. So yesterday I went there and taught them the conveyor belt game. So that's what I thought we might do today, because it's such fun. And really, don't you think that as joy is the first arising on the path, that we should be having a bit more fun with our Zen mm-hmm. practice. Okay. Or not. Anyway. I'm sorry, I just find the longer I practice, the more joyful I become, so it's hard not to try to share that. So the conveyor belt game is quite fun, if you like to see it that way. We're used to this simply sitting upright, staying with the breath, and letting everything go as best we can. We're used to seeing the thoughts come and hopefully not getting involved with them. So that's exactly what this game is about, and it's to do with staying on the breath and seeing the thoughts coming towards you on a conveyor belt. Just like when you're at Safeway and your groceries, you know, you put them down and then they all start moving along on that little conveyor belt. So this is your image. Your thoughts coming towards you on a conveyor belt. Now, this of course is a slightly more advanced practice than just staying with the breath. The staying with the breath is the basic practice. And then here's one example of how it's useful. We often don't know that we're judging. If we could just stay with the breath and just stay with the breath and just be here at contact, just connect and leave it at that, what peace that would be. But we know that in our meditation, in our Zazen, the first thing that usually happens is something comes up in the mind, something arises, and you think, oh, I don't like that. Oh, I like that. I want it. I don't want it. So the very first thing usually that arises after bare contact, which is an interesting place to put your effort at staying, the very first thing that arises is choosing, picking and choosing. And you know that sutra that says the great way is not difficult for those who don't stay attached to their preferences. So this is a very simple way of looking at your response to your thoughts. Now, this is usually hard to do, because what we're doing is Zazen, oh, thought, okay, and with a bit of luck it's gone, and then you're on to the next one. But this one is challenging you to look at that thought as it comes towards you and note any response. So it's actually a further step into training. Because often we don't know, as I said, that we're making judgments. We like to think of ourselves as prejudice-free. We like to think, oh yes, you know, I've never been like that, and I don't prejudge people, I don't, you know, I'm very open-minded. But when you try the conveyor belt game, you'll see that you have a response to just about every thought you're having. So instead of our usual letting the thought go by, la la la, let's see actually what our response is. This is a really deep awareness training. First the breath, then what's going on here? What is your response to these things? Because you'll find out that, of course, your whole world is created by those responses. For example, take my mother, for example. You can't, she's been gone for 20 years, but take my mother, for example. She used to have such fixed opinions on things, and I really didn't understand where she was coming from. Until in my teens, I became interested in Buddhism, although I thought it was a kind of miserable sounding religion because it was all about suffering, so it sounded a bit miserable to me. But anyway, I brought Buddhism up to my mother, and I said there was this historical figure, Shakyamuni Buddha, and he learned a way to get peace of mind, and he started teaching it. And she said, no, 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 no. He never existed. And I said, well, but how do you know that? How do you know he never existed? And she said, well, You can read that Bible from cover to cover, and there's no mention in there of a Buddha, so he didn't exist. And suddenly, the kind of shape of my mother's belief system became so apparent to me, and the realization was enormous. Oh, that's how she sees the world. That's why women are the original sinners, and as soon as a woman is born, you're a sinner. You know, of course, you're made out of Adam's rib and all the rest of it. And it gave me a whole better understanding of where my mother was coming from. So similarly, if you become aware of your prejudgments, your prejudices, because you do them, then you can have a better understanding of yourself and consequently everyone you meet. So this awareness of the breath is not just a way to sit in repose in the Dharma gate of bliss and repose. It's not just a way to sit there and be happy. The next step is actually to work on yourself, to have a look, to get friendly with yourself, because you'll find probably some things in there that you're not too keen on. After all, you know, it's not everything about yourself that you feel like you want to share with everyone. And yet, it's our vulnerabilities that connect us. So getting to know yourself in a friendly manner is very interesting and very, very useful. Self-acceptance is, of course, the basis for acceptance of everyone. So, yes, we do have time. Let's just do 3 minutes on this one. So, basically, we'll start off again with the breath, and now you all have a great tool to establish your awareness of breath. Simply tell yourself what kind of breath is happening. When you feel steady on the breath, try the conveyor belt. See your thoughts come towards you. I know this is not very Zen, but don't worry. See your thoughts come towards you as though on a conveyor belt, and see your reaction. Right? They'll be going fairly fast. You know, you don't get long at Safeway. They kind of go fast. But see if you can spot that reaction. So what we experienced this morning were basically the first and the last part of the very first teaching on awareness of breathing. The first part just the breath, and the last part objects of mind. So how was that for people? Did it work for you? Did you see it happen? Did you see your reactions?
For the most part, I became distracted.
By?
Well, the first time I thought a lot about the difference between banana bread and other kinds of cakes.
Was that what was coming down the...
Well, the conveyor belt, totally different things.
Still, I guess it served one purpose. You were focused and you weren't suffering. Thinking about banana bread.
I was not suffering.
Excellent.
Yeah,
so. There are many different ways to do this. Anyone else?
In the first exercise, I felt as if the length of my breath was not long enough to allow me to describe it. So I had to use shorthand. Shorthand mind, speak sort of thing. And the second time I got on the conveyor belt.
How was it?
Well, I just got carried away with.
Got checked out.
Was no, as long as you didn't check out. Well, isn't it interesting? You introduce one practice, you don't get two people doing the same thing. It always interested me to ask people at the Zen Center or the monastery, so what do you do with your zazen? Because we tend to assume we're all sitting there doing the same thing, but, we're not. Anyone else? Yeah.
Well, in the breathing part, I kept worried about, am I controlling my breath? I shouldn't be controlling my breath. And then on the conveyor belt, I kept worried about, what if nothing comes down the conveyor belt? But it did eventually.
So how would you describe the condition of your mind at the moment?
A little anxious, I guess. Yes.
No, so
yes,
there's a very
anxious.
Useful thing.
Yes.
Just from making the effort.
Mm-hmm.
To do something like that, you find, oh, well, right now, I'm a wee bit worried. So you might actually want to investigate, what exactly is that about? We don't have to be passive. I know we don't want to get involved in every little thought that comes along, but when you see a theme, then it's worth taking a step back and saying, what's going on? Anyone else?
And the cool thing about the conveyor belt is when the thought comes to the end of the conveyor belt, it kind of falls off.
Mm-hmm.
The conveyor belt doesn't have loops.
Ah, so the thought just disappears.
Just, and then the next one,
comes the next one. Yeah. So it's just a different way of looking at things arising in each moment. Each moment they fall off the conveyor belt and another one comes up. There we are. Yeah,
I kind of had a similar experience. I noticed earlier sitting, I'd get a thought and I could really take it and just run and add a storyline. It just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Whereas this, it was easy to things for them to, like you say, fall off. So they kept falling off. But the other thing that really surprised me was how I had an opinion on each of them, like or dislike.
Right. Isn't that interesting? And I think there's a mistake made sometimes in practice when you see, someone said to me one day, I was talking to some other priest and I said what I thought, and they said to me, "Ooh, you have opinions." And I'm like, "Wait, oh, I see, I'm a Zen monk. We don't think good or bad. We know we're not into dualism, so ergo, you can't ever have an opinion." But that's not a positive way to go. I mean, how can you stop yourself from having opinions and judgments? I mean, I touch the floor, oh, it's nice and smooth and it's cold. Right away, there's opinions and judgments. So I say that it's not, we're not trying to get rid of dualism. We're not trying to get rid of opinions. We're not trying to get rid of judgments. We're human beings, we're always going to have them while we're alive. What's the key is not to be dragged around by them. So the best way not to be dragged around by them is to know you're having them. So you can have that opinion, you know, say I look at Ben and I go, I know what that kind of guy's like. I can have that opinion, but if I attach to it, if I hold to it, I'll never get to know him. So this, I think, is really, really important to remember. If you don't remember anything else, it's not about not having opinions. It's not about not having prejudgments, judgments, all of that, but don't be dragged around by them. So if you see clearly, oh yeah, I feel that way, and then fine, then I'll go on ahead. It's like that old saying, what does a monk offer the world? And the answer is usually fearlessness. And it's not that you're not terrified and frightened. I mean, good grief, I mean, we're born, we put all this effort into it, and then we die. I mean, you know, But you see your fear, you see it very clearly, there's the fear, and then you go on ahead. So this is total liberation. This is total freedom. Not to turn yourself into a Barbie doll or a Ken doll that's perfect and has no funny opinions and no strange parts to them. Of course we have. But not to be held back by that, because we all have. So don't put a great deal of effort into what they call dropping the mind. There is and there isn't a mind. Why worry about it? So when you're challenged to drop this or drop that, just remember we're only talking about the attachment to this or that, not the thing itself. You can get too, you can spend the whole rest of your life perfecting yourself and dropping this and dropping that. It won't make any difference, you'll still have this and that. I love that quote from Suzuki Roshi, the problems you have now, and you find yourself thinking, he's going to say how to solve them all, but what he said was, the problems you have now, you will have the rest of your life. So don't worry about it, in other words. I feel I should probably... Oh, I forgot, I have that watch right there. Yes, let me get to the poem. Of course, we have to have a poem. And we have plenty of time to... Of course, the most important part happens upstairs. That's the cookies and the cup of tea. Now, it's said that... there's a lovely story in the beginning of the book, which says that, you know, usually the monks got together in the rainy season and then when the sunshine came out, they all dispersed. But the Buddha thought that the teaching of breathing, now full awareness of breath, because as I say, it starts with breath, then body, then mind, then objects of mind, so you've got it all covered. He thought it was so important that he stayed an extra season. So hearing of this, people all over India came rushing to try to spend that extra season, that extra meditation time with the Buddha. And seeing them all, he felt encouraged to teach the most essential thing, which was the awareness of breathing. And I think, you know, if we have compassion for ourselves and allow this teaching to come in, to enjoy the peace and grace in every moment, then in order to show gratitude for that, we can share this with everybody. You see, you can share this with anybody. You don't have to do anything or know anything or believe anything. You can just share this. Because it's obvious, even sitting making the effort brings you a little peace, because you're not all involved. So it's said that when he first started to teach it, then he got all his monks to go and teach it. Said some of them taught 30 people, some of them taught 50 people, because to the Buddha this was the way to end suffering. So he wanted it to spread out. So every time I share this with a group, I always say, now go and share that with someone else if you found it useful. Imagine, just imagine for a second if everyone on the whole planet could see how they judge, how they respond to things, and understanding that the most important thing on the whole planet is loving kindness, saw that response and chose to act from loving kindness. I mean, I have very large vision for our teachers. So this poem, as I say, I'm always inspired by the folks I work with, and the inspiration for the whole thing on breathing was James, one of my students, and then this charming woman, Marine, came from France. She works with homeless people on the streets of Paris. And she's been hanging out with our groups for a few months now, she came over to see how harm reduction meditation is taught in America, only to find out that it was actually just me. So she's been coming to all the groups. And she is going to take the methodology back to Paris. But I had been talking about breath. And she actually turned up at the Tuesday afternoon group, 1:30, in Langton Gardens, if anybody would like to come. Howard Street between 7th and 8th. I brought some of my cards, so everybody can have one. There is a website. By the way, I noticed on the poster it said I'm from San Francisco Zen Center. Just to be clear, I left there a couple of years ago. And have a sangha kind of without walls. In other words, we're all over the place. So, but there is a little schedule on the website if you want to come and join us, which would be delightful. So this is actually, it was Marine, the lady from Paris, turned up at the Tuesday group, which is in a garden, which is really nice. We have chickens. Who really like to meditate. Have you ever tried meditating with chickens? You hit that bell, they all go. This is called Breathe, You Are Alive. So I'll just say this is another technique that I use in the groups where a lot of time I'm working on concentration with folks because it is hard to just, you know, how do you provide good training outside of a monastery or a temple? Well, you have to have concentration, of course. So as a concentration exercise, we often begin to sit and then someone will read something they found very interesting. So this is what we're doing. And the idea is you treat my voice as though it were your thoughts. And just, as Suzuki Roshi said, just listen without any kind of trying to understand. Just enjoy. This is called Breathe, You Are Alive by Annabelle Laity. Breathe and you know that you're alive. Breathe and you know that all is helping you. Breathe and you know that you are the world. Breathe and you know that the flowers are breathing too. Breathe for yourself and you breathe for the world. Breathe in compassion and breathe out joy. Breathe and be one with the air that you breathe. Breathe and be one with the river that flows. Breathe and be one with the earth that you tread. Breathe and be one with the fire that glows. Breathe and you break through the thought of birth and death. Breathe and you see that impermanence is life. Breathe for your joy to be steady and calm. Breathe for your sorrow to flow away. Breathe to renew every cell in your blood. Breathe to renew the depths of consciousness. Breathe and you dwell in the here and now. Breathe and all you touch is new and real. I had a temptation when I came in to do something that actually Paul Haller did on the last night of a 7-day sesshin, 7 days of meditation. We were all sitting there, you know, thinking, hooray, it's nearly over, you know. We were all sitting there, of course, just drifting peacefully in nirvana. And he said, that breath you're breathing now is your last breath. And then he said, and the next one is a gift. And I really like that, which is why I said it. But didn't do it on you when I came in, you're all sitting zazen. And it was quite a shock when he did that, but it's very important to know that actually every one of these breaths is a gift. And we can't count on any of them. And that's what makes everyone so precious. And so if anyone is interested, as I say, the Anna Whatever Sutra has a full training in and of itself. And actually I'm going to teach on it April 13th at MCC Church. We may have a regular Sangha going at MCC Church. So the opening night of that is April 13th, and I've already decided we're going to talk about breath. So thank you very much.
What day of the week is April 13th?
Tuesday. It's a Tuesday evening.
Okay.